This session is part of a webinar series which aims to assist researchers, librarians, and institutions in the adoption of digital tools and persistent identifiers for a significant increase of research discoverability globally and to increase efficiency in scholarly workflows.
Okay, hello everyone. Welcome to our meeting today, to our webinar series on open science for discoverability of African research. My name is Keleto. I'm the project coordinator here at Africa Archive. And just as a background, Africa Archive is a community-led digital archive for African research communication. So we enhance visibility of African research and enable discoverability collaboration opportunities for African scientists on the continent and globally. So on our talk today, or webinar, we welcome our speaker, Dr. Noctulam Junu from the African Open Science Platform. And she'll be speaking to us today on the topic of facilitating the adoption of open science practices across Africa. And before we listen to her, I'd like to give you a background of her and the work that she has done and her experiences. Dr. Noctulam Junu holds the position of Deputy Director at the African Open Science Platform, which is hosted by the National Research Foundation in South Africa. She has extensive expertise in academic outreach initiatives and popularization and the implementation of STEM activities with local communities. She previously served as a senior researcher at the Agricultural Research Council of South Africa in the biotechnology platform. Dr. Mchunu earned her doctoral degree in fungal economics and spent over 15 years as a senior scholar in the Department of Biotechnology at Durban University of Technology. Throughout her career, she has contributed as a scientist in various international institutions, including the University of Cincinnati in USA, Lund University in Sweden, Tianjin University in China, and Center for Chemical Biology in Malaysia. Dr. Mchunu holds the distinction of being the inaugural recipient of the Young Scientist Program established between China and South Africa. Her research encompasses diverse areas such as COVID and pathogen surveillance in wastewater, fungal genetics, cannabis, and African legume genomics. So once again, thank you everyone for joining us today. And we're looking forward to having a very interactive and informative talk with Dr. Mchunu today. So now over to our speaker, Dr. Mchunu.
Yeah. Hi, everyone. Thank you, Keleto, for the kind introduction. And don't worry about all the things that she said. I think the most you can take out as we had a discussion just previously, the start of the webinar with Joe. Just know that in my previous life, I was a researcher and a scientist. So yesterday, I'm more of a paper pusher, I call myself, but I still aligned my heart and soul to researchers. So I will start giving a little bit of my presentation. Let me share. I should share screen. Yeah, so as Keleto had indicated, I am currently serving as a deputy director at the African Open Science Platform. Also, in my other half role is serve as in partnership and university networks for South Africa. So I still use some of the open science activities in our partnership. So I think as a background, I will start talking about the basically where we are sitting as the continent, the agenda of what we are trying to achieve, the 2063 agenda, which is together with the Sustainable Development Goals set up globally. So we want to make sure that the continent is integrated, and the idealism of owning or Pan-Africanism is entrenched or integrated into our way of thinking. We will also, in the agenda, would like to see good governance and democracy and human rights. And if you look at there, we want a peaceful Africa, common heritage, people driven, and looking at the potential for Africa. And of course, we want to make sure that Africa or the people in Africa are united and make sure that they're influential in the as a global player or in the global sphere. So this is what the 2063 agenda kind of encompasses. And I think all of us we agree that we would like to see Africa in this. So the continent has about 1.3, 1.4 billion. It's quite big. It's 70% of the total population. The population that is economically active is only 37%. So we have a leeway to grow there. And of course, we have half population on female and male. And then the median age of Africa currently is 19, so we are quite young. The GDP overall, there is some growth that we could improve, but the rest of the population, 40% of it lives below the just nearly $2 a day. So these are the kind of socioeconomic things that are statistics that are happening in Africa. So I want us to keep this in mind when we discuss this. The young population, but we have relatively very low economic active population, but we have a young population that we can grow into filling that space. Sorry, my mouse is a bit too fast. So with this, what are the challenges in the continent? So of course, yes, we have a GDP that's growing on 4%, but most of the countries only contribute 0.4% on average. I think only Egypt, South Africa are close to 1% at all. Countries had pledged previously in the AU. Our research output is sitting somewhere between 2 and 3% based on accepted, yes, it's up for debate who is accepting them, and per capita spending is around $100. And of course, if you think research per million of people, researchers or scientists, it's only one point, nearly close to about 200 million. So we don't have a lot of researchers and scientists sitting in the continent. So the graph there just shows a little bit of different countries and their contributions to the GDP. Right, and then of course, while we are talking about this, I wanted also to put the slide. I use it. We highly accept everywhere that everybody has access to the internet and the continent is digitized. But when you really dig the numbers and you look at your global north, again, I'm using this very loosely where they're sitting, and the digitization in the global north is nearly above 90%. If you look at the other global south, the Latin America is sitting somewhere 70%. You go across Asia, some countries are around 60, high 60s, 50%. But if you go in the continent, the highest is sitting around about 50%, and the rest you could have the middle of the continent sitting at 12%. So we must think about this these ideas and challenge these ideas that, again, we have access to computers or internet. Not it is not evenly distributed across the world, and in Africa is even worse. So this also kind of, if you then look at, if you compare this access to internet digitalization kind of, and you can use it as a yardstick for modernization, you look at what just the pandemic we went through, a distribution of COVID vaccine across the world. If you look when we were at a certain space around 2001, 2002, the distribution of vaccines, again, it followed what we would call modernization or digital access or internet access, how you name it. In Africa, we only had 8%. So again, we must also think global south. You have Latin America and Asia. We can draw that line, but again, Africa is more, has a more, a much bigger gap to try and fill compared to our other partners in the global south. So these are the things of if you then followed what we did during COVID, there was a lot of things coming out from Africa. I've included the picture for Ebola. There's a lot of work happening in West Africa. How can we lead in this information age and generate new knowledge? So these are the challenges that we kind of live with, this kind of gap in digitalization or access to digital infrastructure kind of in overall, which perpetuates the gap in health, in economy, and of course some of the instabilities that are happening in the continent. Then, of course, if you then talk about data and how do we share this knowledge or whatever comes out of the continent, it'd be remiss of me not to share this, although maybe the data is not as updated as it should be. We're just looking at scholarly publication, how much is open compared to how much is closed and how much we are contributing. So, of course, I use South Africa and Egypt, and if you look across the other country, it actually decreases, and we need to figure out how to increase this output, where you have countries like Tunisia that still only have about 14% of their research outputs being open access or being accessible freely by everyone. So we need to figure out how we change these paradigms in order to address these challenges. So, sitting within the African Open Science and in the NRF, and of course also we work very closely with our ministry. So I wanted to think about of approaching open science for today's topic, and in general, how do you use open science to promote science? When we say science, we mean everything that it encompasses: knowledge generation and technology exchange and cooperation within the continent and with other stakeholders globally. So, of course, this is what I was talking about. We think everybody has access to this, but not really. But how can we use this as a springboard that everybody we can use to push this agenda of sharing, of cooperation, of collaboration to promote African research and African discoveries. So I've kind of tried to think of a little bit out of the box about open science. I know there's lots of graphics, but let's think of it about people. The people are the knowledge professionals, they are scientists, they are technology and specialists, there's policy. In there, the list will go on. You have traditional knowledge holders, you have citizens, you have everybody. So you have also to think about the people in the whole enterprise of open science. Then you have to think about institutions. What are the institutions who are there? You have research institutions, you have universities. And then if you add other things that you could think of also, for us, we have research institutions that are government institutions, you have research institutions that are not. So how do you map everybody there? Then of course, we will need this type of research in infrastructure. And there are other things that we may have to think about when we think of how again to use open science to promote African or positioned African knowledge system globally, however, to make sure that we address the challenges in the continent. So the African Open Science platform was kind of envisioned also in that kind of thinking, because it is not only just to address the open science UNESCO implementation or the recommendation for the implementation of it. It is more centered on how do we use open science for the benefits of the African science community and its people. So we want to make sure that we kind of divided, or if you look at the strategic document, it talks about what are the open science resources that we need, who we need to reach, engage, who we need to capacitate in the continent in order to be able to engage in this enterprise. Again, if we are dealing with open science, you are dealing with really data intensive science and outcomes in this day and age. For example, what are the global challenges, projects that exist in the continent? You could think about health, agriculture, climate change, education, food security. So the list under that box can go on. So how you then use cutting edge technologies like data science and now AI to start thinking about how do you support all this growth and addressing these challenges. And then the actual physical infrastructure and virtual infrastructure that is needed to do this. So the African Open Science Platform itself is not the implementer or the doer of these things, because we don't have this expertise. So we think our job is more convening and coordinating and make sure that whoever in the continent is doing things, how can we leverage of each other the ideas, the people, the institutions, to make sure that we provide the resources for open science in Africa and for Africans. So if you think, as I set the stage, African resource is constrained. So the R&D budget is constrained, but we do have things sitting in different spaces in the continent. How do we leverage and coordinate these things and these institutions, its infrastructure, its people, to make sure, again, that all these resources are used in an open science principle in Africa and for the African community. So how we approach this, and of course, as I said, I am the deputy director here, is sitting at the NRF, so, and this is just the secretariat. So we went about it a little bit to try and appoint nodes in Africa. We the eventuality is to cover all five economic blocks in Africa. Right now, we only have appointed three, which is Southern. You have East Africa block and North Africa. We are still left a little bit with West Africa and Central Africa, and we are hoping by end of this month, the call for those nodes that will do activities in their region will go out, and we can get nodes appointed in those regions. So we do different work. So Sorry, it's not because I'm on a platform created by Africa Archive. It's just we do work with them. So again, for example, the scholarly publication platform that Dr. Joel Haverman founded. So we think such infrastructure is the right idea in the continent. Instead of us starting a new infrastructure, we should try to use existing infrastructure in strengthening, promoting, and making sure that, again, African scientists are aware of this infrastructure and how they can be used to target or fulfill the agenda of making sure that the knowledge is freely accessible for Africans, but also is discoverable to make sure that we are promoting this knowledge that is generated in the continent. So, of course, in South Africa or also globally, South Africa holds this large infrastructure called the Square Kilometer Array, which all the world is able to access the data, the knowledge, the skills. But how can we, in the African Open Science, coordinate with people in this type of area into making sure that they can get data out of the SKA, they can be trained in the SKA? How can we exchange and cooperate within the open science principle that first that the African scientists can benefit and then it can be open globally also? And of course, we also started working on what we call the COVID Rapid Grant. So this is just an example. We're trying to work with funders on how to centralize and coordinate output from funding or funding challenges or funding projects that have happened in Africa. How to coordinate to make sure that we have a multilateral response and capacitate institutions and make sure the outputs from these grant challenges or from this project are open in for other countries and are open to other scientists who were not part of those initiatives. So currently, this project is coming to an end. However, we are making sure that all the outputs that came from this such an example are openly accessible, not just to 17 countries that were involved in this project, but to all 54 member states of the continent. So for us, at the end, this is what we want to engage with people to make sure how we can leverage all the hard or the physical and the virtual infrastructure. How can we have programs or capacity programs on data science or AI or data? How can we have collaborative programs and application now on the actual challenges, including health, diversity, biodiversity, agriculture? I mean, you can list all of them. Also, how we can create this network across the continent that everybody can have access to the material and the skills that are involved in this very data intensive age that we live in. And of course, it is vitally important, and I think we may think that the open access fight has been won, not really, but we really still need that strong network in the continent for open science access and open access itself and having these dialogues and platforms like this that we are having today. So thank you, everyone. I'll stop here for today, and I hope I haven't bored anyone. Thank you again for Africa Archive and access to perspective, and thank you again for having me on this webinar and discussing the African Open Science platform, but in general, how we think we should approach the open science tools or open science as a way to achieve what we require to achieve in the continent. Thank you. I'll stop sharing.
Thank you very much, Dr. Mshinu. It was such a pleasure listening to you. A very enlightening presentation indeed. I like the fact that you're really emphasizing on the need for networking within Africa as a way of promoting research and its discoverability as well. That's a very important point that I have taken out from the presentation personally. Right now, I think I'll just take questions from the audience. If you have anything that you'd like to ask, add on, comment, this is the time. Any comments? If you have any comments. Or maybe from the chat, do we have any questions from the chat, Ibuka?
No, we don't have any for now, but I'll keep an eye.
Okay, no questions. Okay, maybe just a very
sorry.
Yeah, somebody just dropped a question now.
Oh, okay, all right.
So, if would you that, prefer read it out, or do you want to read it out?
You can read it out, please. Thank you.
Okay, it says, "Can I ask what incentives do you see promoting open research?"
Can you repeat it again, please?
Can you hear me?
I repeat it again for.
Okay, the question says, he's trying to ask about the incentives that are there in promoting open research.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you for the question from the participant. That's a really tough question, it's not a tough question. It is an obvious question. However, the answer is tough to come out for all the stakeholders to put something on the table. So my answer to this question is that there's two things. We need incentives for the researchers, and I always say that the reason why we have the research system that we have is that it's awarding this type of closed publication or for commercial publication, and this is how the system is set. So I think that the basic thing, the first thing that we need to do is look at how can we incentivize researchers and scientists in their career, basic promotion, and if they participate in this way of open science type of doing their research. Also, we will need to figure out also what are the, not only incentive, what are the stick or the roadblocks that we have to put or dissuade people from continuing as a status quo. So I normally, first and foremost, the first, the researchers themselves have to ask themselves why they are doing the research. Usually, any researcher in their proposal, they will say they want to help a particular community. But after the completion of the study, it is quite rare that researchers will go back to the community or the people who have a problem and inform them, even if it's a basic solution, this does not happen. So I think on the side of the researchers, the mindset and attitude needs to kind of like change on how we think about open science and what it means or why we conduct research. And then two, the system has to change on the side of, I would say, executive or institution, and then how do you reward those people who are doing that? And it, of course, it's obvious you need to put in promotion policies, I mean, hard cash, I would say, for people who are participating in this, and it's the only way. We cannot keep doing that, saying it's the right thing to do, so people must do it. Eventually, we will have to put something on the table for the researchers and the scientists.
Okay, right, thank you very much. I see a hand. Samilo, we can go ahead and ask a question.
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you, Noctula, for the presentation. I really enjoyed it. I liked the part where you said we should focus on the people and looking at institutions and policies. I think that's a vital point when we talk about the issues of open science. What I want to say is when you talk of open science, I mean, it's making research open and accessible for everyone. But what happens here is the burden, okay, I'm saying burden, I'm putting burden in quotes. It is moving from the reader to the author. So the author now takes like the brunt of the whole publication process, because once, of course, knowledge is made open, but the author has to pay APC. They have to pay for their thing to get it. Prior, you would pay to get access to whatever information you want. But now there's this shift now where that brand is going to the author. So the things that we should be talking about now is how do we take this burden from the author, from the one who's producing the knowledge? How do we bring in our libraries and come up with policies where maybe we reduce APCs and the author doesn't? Because I'm at Stellenbosch University. And I'm very fortunate to be in this university where we have a lot of funding and we get subsidies. We don't have to pay at times because to publish in some journals because of the arrangements that our libraries have with some. But that's not the case for everyone here in South Africa and not even the whole of Africa. So, yeah, I think these are the conversations that we need and how we bring everyone together, librarians, everyone involved in the production of knowledge. Thank you. I'm sorry I have to rush. I have a meeting now, but thank you for this. I really enjoyed it.
Thank you. Thank you, Samela.
Yeah, thanks, Samela. I think that's a pertinent issue. It's the issue of open access. Of course, we have some type of the current existing model of open access, which Similo is talking about, which is pay to publish. This is not really truly open access. And of course, if you start talking about APCs, we will be here the whole day. Joe will have to start a whole new webinar for a whole day to discuss that. So for me, to answer this question, I think we have to think about two things. It's related to the question that Joe posted on the chat about how do you think that DIAMOND open access should operate in Africa. So DIAMOND open access is where the burden of the upkeep of the publishing is not on the author or on the institution. So authors or researchers can publish without paying APCs, but also the institution do not have to pay for access. But that infrastructure has to be taken care of somehow. So of course, if you think of knowledge as a public good, if it can be taken care of by all the people who do public good, government, agencies that fund research and fund the publication or the scholarly communication platforms so that we are not relying on commercial publishers, because this is where the problem, the whole scholarly communication system is reliant on commercial publishers, and they have to find their money somewhere. And this is where they found it. Is either they'll find it from the author or from the institution. The second thing, in my opinion, we have to do is, again, reduce the thought that when a person does research, they only have to publish a scholarly publication, and that's the only thing that counts. we don't do research to tell our peers. We do research to serve a community. So how do we change a little bit of the mindset of the researchers that they communicate their research mostly in public policy briefs, in public type of popular publication that a normal citizen can consume, and less only talking to their peers, which is a hardcore publication, because if we do that, then we take away that burden. But we must reward this popular type of communication with briefs and whatever that will be communicated. And in my opinion, I think in my previous life, I was in genetics. It means a person in genetics would only have their writing, maybe only 5% in a journal publication. The rest should be geared toward talking to the citizens, to the people concerned about that research. So it is not a technical writing thing. Then if you are publishing in a newspaper to tell somebody in isiZulu what you found, you don't need to pay. And it will take you a day or two to write that up. So I think it's this attitude and culture and thinking. And then we have to give some carrot on those type of activities.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Dr. Mshino, there's another question from the charts. It's about resources. So it's from Lydia. She says, which sites are accessible for researchers with open resources?
Yeah, I think there are many sites. I won't name them here. For example, Africa Archive is one. So I think maybe somebody in the background, or maybe a Booker or Joe, can just post these ones, the source, or on, because they it depends what are your needs and what exactly are you talking about open resources. What are your needs? I can give you my email and I can share whatever also I know that you will have access.
All right, Lydia, so you can get in touch with Dr. Mshino for more resources, but you can also get more information from our website, africaarchive.org. It's also in the chat, the links being shared by our team in the chat as well. So you can look at that. Do we have any more questions from the audience? Okay, I'm just going to read something from, this is from Anelda. Anelda says, how do you think peer review would come into play? So she says, thank you for your presentation. I find your comment about primarily publishing in places meant about in places meant to serve communities as an interesting thought. How do you think peer review would come into play there?
Yeah, that is kind of something that we have to think about. But we sometimes I feel when we ask that question, we are assuming that the current peer review system of commercial publishing is working, which is not working. Because if you look at retraction and what you've been seeing going on in the world, where top researchers in what we consider high universities in the global north having to resign their post because of fraudulent behavior in publishing. So I think we need to also think that the current system itself is not perfect. So when we talk about the peer review type of thing in an open access, open science practice, we have to think about this. One thing I tell people is that if a researcher or somebody maybe publishes something or shares something in an open platform to all researchers, it is easier to review and find something is wrong with it than having only two people looking at the paper and saying it's good. So by immediately sharing it, you are opening yourself up for criticism, and that is peer review. So this is what we need to think of. However, most of the time, what I've seen, and especially in my field, is that you find that most of the things, the methodologies are repeated, they are the same. So we take all this long to repeat the same thing that somebody said or used, and you kind of applied it in something else. And again, if you use this open or public type of a review system where people can discuss and criticize your paper because it's freely available. By a month, somebody would already, or 10 people, if it's really wrong, they would have said. But if you send it to two publishers, and let's say Keleto send this to me and Joe, because we know her, we say everything is good, then it's published. Then it's very hard for people, and then people accept it as truth. But if you put up work and you kind of say that it is not peer reviewed, but this is what I found, people can input, not as in peer review, input and make sure that that work is up to scratch. The other thing is that in the research area itself, we could think about a more start to finish instead of only peer reviewing the finished product. If we have open proposal in the writing process, and when you perform your methodologies, people kind of input your system as you go. So by the end, you've kind of been peer reviewed by your community of practice, whichever community of practice. And this is why sharing is very important, because if your community can see what you are doing, it's easier for the whole community to critique instead of one person. And then by the time you write that popular publication, it is kind of succinctly taken that it has been taken from this work. I hope I have answered some of it in the question, but I must admit that the peer review system, even in the open science practices, we still need to think about it and experiment until we find the right word, the right one that, or right ones, because it won't be one that will work for the system.
That's true. Great, thank you very much. There's another question from Heta and one from the chat. So I'll start with the one from the chat because that came first. Heta, then you can go second, and then Dr. Mchunu will answer two of your questions. The other one says, it's from Gi Dumetse. She says, I have my research on the university's repository, and it is classified as unrestricted, although it seems it's only for those that are registered with the university. Is this an aspect of open access, or can you share how students can ensure that their research is open to all? So that's one question. And then Heta, you raised your hand, you can ask. So Dr. Mchunu can answer both questions.
Okay, can you hear me?
Yes.
Can you hear me? Okay. I want to ask, I have placed one of my articles on open access. So in theory, we are saying that it's good to use. Well, I'm very much in favor of open access, but I have to point out that what happens in practice, because there isn't any formal process associated with the UNIS archive, you place your article on there, then the onus is on the author to invite reviewers. As far as I can remember, I have invited at least 14 specialists. I've invited that I know they're interested in information science and so on. I've had many rejections and non-responses. I've had one person commit to doing a review for me, and that person is still busy with it since, I think, November last year. So I have to caution. Just saying, in practice, it's not so easy because there's no formal system in place. I am aware, so I'm also a publisher. While I'm an emerging academic, I've completed my MA. This was an article based on my PhD, on my MA. So I'm alerting South Africa that it's not so simple to place it online and hope for a review. This article I wrote is 22 pages of a high standard. nobody's coming forward to review it. That's the challenge. It's not as if because it's out there, people are, and it's not as if I haven't invited the right specialists. They have no motivation. Who am I? They can't care about what I do. So it's a bit tricky, but I'm aware that at the Stockholm University Library, they have an open and revolving peer review. We still have to learn a little bit about systems, but because it's not in a system, nobody cares to respond even. They're not picking things up. So I'm asking for advice. That's all. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
I think these two questions are kind of related because we are talking about mm-hmm. institutional repositories that are yes. sitting in the institution.
Yes.
So I think for the one about the students that this is deposited in an institutional repository that is open within the institution but not for outsiders. This is normal. Again, it depends what the open access policy for the institution says. And of course, it's up to the mercy of the supervisor what they instruct the libraries to do with the thesis. So I think, again, in South Africa, we kind of, along the path of getting into an open access, open science policy, which will be an instruction that everything produced using public funds should be open access, not in the repository, but throughout globally. So that is so. These repositories, institutional repositories, are dependent on what is the policy within the institution and how you do that. You can the participant who asked this question go back to their supervisors and say, "Can I make it take a copy and deposit it in a repository?" Or a global repository that will make it accessible to everybody, like, for example, Africa Archive. I think Joe will welcome that this is and it'd be available for everybody but then you would have to get permission from your institutions because I'm not exactly sure what are the open access policies in the institution. On Hector, her question is a bit tricky again. It's sitting at an archive that belongs to the university, and you are right to saying that none of the reviewers have a motivation to review and come because it's again the system. So generally, the academics who do a lot of reviewing for commercial publishers will get a letter to say that they have been actively being reviewers for these journals, and they can put it in their CVs, and then come promotion policy time or publication or application time for another post, it kind of fits into their reward system. That nothing rewards them for, as you are saying, that from reviewing an open review in your paper. This system, until there is some check and balances and there's a whole cultural change and academics are awarded or kind of given some incentive to participate in these open reviews is the only time they will do this. So again, Hector, you may want to think how can you again put it in a more generalist archive. We are thinking very hard with many people, how do we connect institutional repositories as a network so everybody can kind of get into each other's repositories. Again, you have to have policies that speak to each other. And two is how each community of practice builds an open community that is dedicated into these open science activities. We have to build each practice a community. So again, I'll use mine in genetics. if we are using an open review system and you haven't built the community of network to get involved in this system, it will actually help with this peer review because they'll be part of this open peer review system. Two, the other pressure is, and I've seen a comment, is what I said, there's too many papers going for publication because this is what we currently rewarded. How do we change that pressure to publish more on popular publication so that only things that critically need critical evaluation by the community is put out there to do that, so that the communities of practice or the experts are not stretched out, that they can only review one paper and then they can't do a lot and then they ignore some of these requests. So the whole system change and attitude has to talk to each other. If you only try to move one, it is kind of difficult to change the whole system. I think I will stop there. We are almost running out of time and give other people if we still have questions.
I think what Dr. Mchunu was addressing is the challenges that I think every researcher will sort of come across when they're transitioning to open science. So do we have any more questions? I can see that the chat is also very active. People are commenting and asking. That's very good. Do we have any more questions? I think maybe just one last one. Dr. Mchunu, what other challenges do you think researchers or scientists will may come across when they're trying to transition to open science, and how can they overcome those?
Yeah, I think we kind of indirectly touch on them. It's mostly, the biggest one is cultural change and behavioral change. As researchers, we are used in behaving in a specific way. We are used to, in a specific type of system, even if we want to change, it doesn't come automatically. We fall back on our old behavior. So it is kind of, if you tell a researcher to write a popular publication, it took me long. It's like, what do you mean? That is not science. You know, it's all that's not research. So I think, and then you need to interrogate what is it that you were trying to do to begin with. So a whole system cultural change, why we do research and who do we do it for? That's the biggest one. And then I think two is lack of policies to support the change of behavior. So it's many policies on one that was touched here, research reward, infrastructure policies, the whole systematic behavior that, especially in Africa, that will kind of support this type of change of behavior. And as community, as people who are in open science, we need to go to the communities. I think awareness is, we've been talking about open science for long, but we talk among ourselves. How do we go to the communities of practice, not communities of practice, and come to us and say, okay, this is open science. I've been in a room where I once went to, I don't know if you know cartography, it's people who make maps, and most of them haven't heard about open science. So you start from scratch. So I think it's the things that we need to go to communities of practice, speak about it, so that they can think about what does it mean for them and how then we form these networks. And I think if you can do those three, awareness and have policies, and then kind of have a whole systematic cultural change, it will work. And then open science is huge, it's so many things. But I think as a community or as Africans, we need to pick some of the imperatives and just stick to them and stick on it and try to get somewhere so that we can achieve something.
Okay, thank you very much. So integration, community engagement, think that's my take home from the last part. So I think that brings us to the end of our talk. Thank you very much, Dr. Mchunu, for an enlightening conversation and the audience who participated. Let me just say that if there are any more questions or any more comments, you can email us, or for more information, just visit our website, africaarchive.org, where you can find the recordings and other related material. So to conclude, I think I'll pass to my colleague, Ebuka.
All right. Thank you so much, Galetso, and thank you all for joining us today. Especially to our guest, Dr. Nkutula Nkunu. It's indeed an honor that we have you as our guest today. And I also want to thank our audience for making out time to, you know, join us in this session. So we've been talking on the topic, facilitating the adoption of open science practices across Africa. So thank you all for joining us. And then our webinar session that we had today is the first for the year, and we have many more exciting webinars and speakers in our subsequent sessions. So our next webinar session will be on March 14th, and our guests are going to be Maria Guerrero and Sarah Lippincott from Dryad. So we hope that you all will join us as you did today, and thank you all again for joining us, and see you in our next webinar session. Thank you all.